On today's episode of Hoops 360, we have a WNBA CBA. We talked to Brianna Stewart, and we'll get her reactions on the negotiations. Plus, UCLA guard Kiki Rice joins the show, and we break down some potential legacies that could be cemented during this March Madness tournament. Don't miss it. What is up, everybody? Welcome into the latest edition of Hoops 360. I'm popping my champagne. I'm doing a little happy dance. Today is a good day because we have a WNBA CBA finally as of early in the wee hours of the morning on Wednesday, March 18th. So on today's show, we will break down everything that we do know about the CBA, but just a warning, it's not a whole lot. And there's no better person to help us break down what this new CBA means than the person that helped negotiate it herself. WNBPA Vice President Brianna Stewart swings by the program. Also, it's March. We are in the thick of the NCAA tournament, so we'll tap into some college hoops with UCLA's Kiki Rice, who joins the show to break down her mindset and her team's goals as we head into March Madness. Welcome into the show. She is Ice Young. That is Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. Guys, it was so good to see you in person this past weekend. We did a full tournament breakdown in studio in our Yahoo New York studios on Monday morning. So if you missed that, you can check that out on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. Just click that live tab and you'll see our lovely little faces doing a full tournament breakdown. But before we get into some college hoops things, y'all, it's CBA day. We have a CBA. Cass, just your initial reactions when you heard, one, that we have a CBA, two, the latest that you've heard about maybe some details or intricacies on the new CBA.
Yeah. Initial response this morning, seeing it first thing was an exhale. I feel like we've just been kind of on pins and needles, like always near our phones, always checking everything and everyone for 8 days since they started more than 100 hours of negotiations. So it's done. Let's move on with the off season. It's going to be an absolute crunch. I think it's the day we're recording, 51 days until the start of the season. So there is a lot to do. What I am hearing, a piece of the transcript that Kathy Engelbert spoke with on-site reporters was shared with me, where they talked about the next steps. They're probably going to give the lawyers a day or two to kind of catch up on sleep, which hopefully everyone in those rooms is doing. Once they come back, right now, it's just a verbal agreement. They will have that kind of come to terms, the long sheet. Then they will move through. It will send to the union for a vote. It will send to the Board of Governors, so the owners, for a vote. Once that is all done, the CBA will be ratified, codified, what have you. And we will have it kind of in our hands, in our virtual hands, to be able to see. In terms of the schedule, which we can get deeper into, I am hearing, just as Kathy said overnight, that they are intending to hold everything as has kind of been planned. A timeline was sent to teams a couple of weeks ago. They were kind of proposed windows, proposed dates for certain things. For example, the expansion draft, April 1st through April 6th. Those things are still, it seems like, on target, but the league cannot share anything in stone until a CBA is completely done.
I'm so happy. Y'all know how happy I was. In fact, I was so happy that I texted y'all at 3:15 a.m. and said, we have a new CBA. No, I wasn't up that late just for fun. I had just finished work. I got home, saw the info on social, and I was like, oh my goodness, I've got to text our group. We've got stuff to talk about in the morning. I'm honestly just very happy for the league as a whole and the players. I can't imagine the amount of stress that some people must have been under on both sides, as owners, as players, as the WNBPA committee.
It's a tongue twister.
It's tricky.
Yes. Thank you. I just can't imagine the level of stress that maybe some of these people were at that have been at the forefront having the conversations and really there. And then also, too, like, I think we have to shout out a lot of the reporters and the media that have been constantly reporting on this. You guys have been doing a great job of just being there late hours. I've seen the tweets, the selfies, all of the different like FaceTime calls of the reporters that are covering our game at the best level that have stayed around. We're in New York. We're boots on the ground. coverage and giving us the information. We all knew that it was going to be historic. Whatever was going to happen was going to be historic. But I think it seems like from some of the details that are have been foreshadowed and that make it confirmed that we're on the right side of history with this new CBA. And I'm just glad that hopefully the ball will tip May 8th.
I am with you. I am over the moon. And Nneka Ogumike mentioned this. Kathy Engelbert's mentioned this about how this is a transformational CBA, not just for the current players in the W, but also for the future generations of WNBA players. And we have gotten some reported numbers. Now, remember, until we see anything from the WNBA or the WNBPA, take everything with a grain of salt. These are just some reported numbers. But the numbers that we are hearing, a salary cap starting at $7 million, up from $1.5 million, massive increase. Average rev share of nearly 20% across the length of the deal. TBD, we don't know what the length of that deal is, but we do know that revenue share was one of the, if not the biggest sticking points in these CBA negotiations. A Supermax starting at $1.4 million. We are going to get a $1 million player in the WNBA. That is massive. That is monumental. And we'll also have an average salary right around $500,000 to $600,000, which is way up from the current average, which is hovering right around $100,000. So as we know, those are just reported numbers. But Ice, your reaction to those numbers?
What? Let's get the bag ready. Come on. No, but this is amazing because I think for the longest time, we have not really known what growth has looked like from a number standpoint for this league. We've seen, you know, audience numbers. We've seen viewership numbers. We've seen ticket sales and merchandise. And we've seen percentages. But we weren't really sure what these numbers could really actually get to. And if these are accurate and correct, I mean, salary cap starting at $7 million is huge. Rev share being around 20%. I know that was the main thing that, you know, the players were fighting for. Huge. The important thing is just that as this league continues to grow, which it will, and as it continues to expand its reach, especially on the international scale of things, you want to make sure that everyone is profiting from the growth. And so I love to hear this. I also think that the average salary range and the minimum is huge. I mean, there were rookie contracts where players were making 60K. You know, now you might make 10 times that based off of what you're worth and the ability to continue to grow your game. And so, yeah, we're talking about having women who have families and lives being able to set themselves up for the future and not necessarily maybe need to play basketball outside of the WNBA because what they're now making in the WNBA can cover their expenses for the year. That is the most important thing I think that the league is trying to make is, hey, we want our players to play here. We want this league to be the first and the only thing of where our players play. And so I think with some of these numbers, if they hold true, that is maybe what the WNBA is guaranteeing. So I'm excited for it and feel like I'm so thankful to have covered a league. When I started covering this league in 2018 and the New York Liberty was playing in like Westchester Academy or something and like a theater ballroom, you know, and I was just enamored with the basketball of it all. But the rest of it didn't look like how the basketball looked, which was exceptional. And I now feel like we have things that look exceptional, like the players also on the floor. And that is what we needed to get to.
And that wasn't that long ago.
I want to dive in. Yeah, it was not that long ago.
Not long ago.
But yeah, Cass,
I want to dive into that, you know, making the WNBA the priority thing. But I also want to mention in terms of you talking about the salary cap, that went up since they first sat down to talk, because we were hearing in the latest league proposal that it was about $6.2 million. And that was a raise from around $5 some million. So that was a big thing that they negotiated. That's going to go a long way. It's 4.6 times what the previous salary cap was. And now you're going to be able to see what comes under that in terms of signing players. But in terms of it being the only league to play in, I think it's an amazing point because Caroline and I spoke on Yahoo Sports Daily this morning about the prioritization clause. That was not a big deal this round. But looking forward, owners are going to want for their league and their team to be a player's not priority, but their only. Because what we're seeing a lot of is they go to other leagues and they're injured, or the wear and tear on their bodies, the travel, all of these kinds of things that impact the product that we see on this in this country, in the WNBA. And I think part of like, it wasn't that long ago is it wasn't that long ago you won a championship. If they held a parade, you didn't attend the parade because you were on a plane to Turkey to play over there up until you missed part of training camp to come back here. And that's why I think the product in the WNBA has always been good. But I think it's been great lately because you are seeing more players take care of themselves in that way. Also, in terms of doing that, you have players who can now build generational wealth for their families and their future in a bigger way than they could before.
And Cass, you made a point when we were talking earlier on Wednesday morning about how now this has always been a professional sport. They've always been professional athletes, but now they get the checks and the compensation that really make them feel like professional athletes. And that can be such an empowering feeling to know that, hey, I'm on TV, I'm on national television, I'm in press conferences, I have endorsement deals. And in the past, I haven't felt valued just in terms of a monetary amount. But now I am all of those things. I am a professional athlete and I'm paid like one. And that is such a special and strong and empowering feeling. But there, that is, as we mentioned, some of these, you know, these external leagues, whether it's AU, Unrivaled, Project B, playing overseas, all of these off-season or supplemental leagues, that is almost one of those like unintended consequences, like more money, more problems. Like, hey, if I'm like a middle of the road WNBA player and I'm still making $500,000, or let's say I am an absolute superstar in this league and I'm making $1 million, why risk injury? Why, you know, fill up my calendar, let's just say, just hypothetically with AU, when I don't have to, when I can hire my own nutritionist, I can hire my own personal trainers, I can stay at home with my family, I can do my own thing, why spend my time elsewhere? So while it's a great thing for the players, while it's a great thing for the WNBA, I do wonder what happens in the short term and the long term for some of these supplemental leagues.
I'm excited to see that those leagues continue because to me, something else that's been an issue with the WNBA is roster spots, right? Which I'm not saying we need to deal with that now. We're trying to get the money right now. We'll deal with the spots on the next CBA. But for seriously, though, there have been so many players who have been cut from training camps, you know, have not been able to make the WNBA because it's only 144 women. And that number is soon going to expand with a couple of teams that we're adding this year. But I feel like, Caroline, it leaves an opportunity for AU and for Unrivaled maybe to make other players stars of our game in places in which we know fans are still following and fans are still watching. I loved being a part of Unrivaled and, you know, Brooklyn, and they sold out Philly. And it's like, people want to watch women's basketball, and they want to watch women's basketball in different platforms, in different ways, 5v5 or 3v3. So I'm also hoping that by this CBA deal, there are more stars and more young players that we get to keep in our professional game that we can pull from the college game so we can continue to build our sport. The last thing I'd love to say about this is, as great as it is for women's basketball, the WNBA, it is also great for women's sports in general. Do not think for a second that there are other women's leagues across the country that are going to look at the WNBA and the CBA and say, okay, well, now we know what they can get at this stage. Let's make sure that we demand the same. I honestly believe that Trinity Rodman signing $1 million deal for the NWSL poked the WNBA a little bit and said, hold on now. This is a league that hasn't been around as long as WNBA, yet she's getting $1 million. We've got to fix things over here. And so they have.
And the NWSL doesn't have nearly the amount of eyeballs that the WNBA does. And hopefully that's changing. The NWSL is getting more and more popular day by day. But the WNBA is the premier women's sports league in the country. I'm not going to say in the world. I don't know if it's in the world. I'm not going to go that far. But in the country, for certain. So, yeah, that's a great point that, you know, this doesn't just change the trajectory of the league. This changes the trajectory of women's sports as a whole, Cass.
Yeah. And a few other things to keep in mind. You know, Ice was talking about more roster spots. They probably didn't get it this time. We haven't heard a lot about that. But what they did get potentially that we have heard is 2 developmental spots per team. That is huge. You know, I also want to mention in terms of Athletes Unlimited, when I've spoken with their leadership, they've said exactly what ICE is saying. You know, we're not here to be an off-season league for these superstars. There's other places for them. What we are more here for is the ecosystem. People, to ICE's point, want to watch women's basketball. That's what it's about. So when they can go out and find talent and help them develop or help them get training camp spots or just be a place to watch games in person and on TV, that was the whole point. And that's going to help feed into the WNBA. Yeah.
So it's going to be good. It's going to be so good. It's going to breed more competition. I don't think AU or Unrivaled or any of these other entities will fold. I actually think that they'll become more competitive and make sure that they're doing right by players, whether you're in season or not in season.
That was the other thing to add in terms of this CBA. You know, when you talk about feeling like a professional, it's going to elevate facilities. We've heard that there's going to be more staff. The league has already really grown its marketing staff. That will probably increase in terms of just league office, what it is able to do to support the players and to grow it. All of this is elevated. Charter flights, fighting for charter flights feels like an eternity ago at this point. Very minutia thing, but that will be codified in the CBA. They have been very open about that on both sides. So it is everything that they are looking at that continues to elevate this. And we should point out that a big reason this is because of the media rights deal and the money that they have from that. And broadcasters finally seeing that they can make money off of this, that people want this, that if you invest, it will come back to you. And that has helped everyone in the ecosystem.
I guess you mentioned how the level of play, the competition has been so much better in recent years. And you bring up travel. I have to think that charter flights are part of that. No longer are you, you know, waiting in line to board with the C group with Southwest Airlines just to get dropped at a, you know, a roach infested motel. You know, you're not just taken care of. I don't know.
Dramatic.
Well, I have a tendency.
We went charter flights to a motel stay. Yikes.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what it used to be. You know, like, we heard Diana Taurasi talk about how, like, they are professional athletes that are walking through airports just to, you know, sit in the back of an airplane. Maybe part of that, there's so many reasons why, but part of the reason why the level of competition feels ratcheted up so much more is these athletes are being taken care of more. They have chartered flights. They have better accommodations. They have better conditions in training facilities. It's all of these things that kind of build up into having a better product. But now what? So we have a CBA, thank goodness, hallelujah. We have a CBA. We also will have a collegiate draft. We have an expansion draft, as we mentioned, Portland and Toronto coming into the league. We have nearly every non-rookie or a player not on a rookie contract as a free agent. We got a lot to do before the May 8th start of the season. We also have training camps. So what now? What comes next, Cass?
So these are all just proposed dates. The last ones we know of that were sent to teams. None of this is in stone yet. Here's what we're looking at. I made a pretty little calendar. You guys said it looked nice. So thank you.
Ooh, exactly.
color-coded. So April 1st to April 6th is kind of the window we are looking at for the expansion draft. Obviously, that includes what we talked about earlier. Teams are going to have to protect based on whatever is in the CBA. The 2 teams, Portland and Toronto, will make their selections. That will probably be just a simple kind of ESPN show like we've seen before. In the past, these lists have not been shared. I don't expect them to be shared now. That covers Final Four weekend, just for people kind of tracking both these things at once. The day after that window will be free agency qualifying projected, the 7th and the 8th. So they will send qualifying offers, reserved, restricted. There are a couple on each team. Also, something to point out that we didn't touch on is if it went through there, the league had kind of proposed a rule that if you win all WNBA on your rookie contract, you basically become, you can more quickly get a supermax. So that's going to impact a few teams this round just in terms of what they had been planning. Right after that, April 9th through the 11th are negotiations where teams can negotiate with free agents. these conversations in terms of players and their agents have already been happening. They have exit interviews. They're not coming into this completely blind, but that is a 3-day window when I believe in the past it's been about 2 weeks. Immediately after that, April 12th through April 18th, is free agency is open. The interesting part about that is we have set in stone the draft on April 13th. That is still ready to go. We have set in stone training camp opening on the 19th, and we have set in stone games on the 25th. Those are all very much confirmed, and I'm hearing that they will not change.
We will catch up with Kiki Rice a little bit later in the show. Of course, UCLA guard. She's a senior this year. The hope is that she's playing in the W next year. Can you imagine the sigh of relief that Kiki and every other collegiate player feels right now?
Ice's face said it all.
Yeah. Can't imagine, you know, you're in March of your senior year. Your dream, your lifelong dream is to play in the WNBA. And for so long, for so many months, and after, 8 days of 12-plus hours of negotiating, you didn't know what your future looked like. Of course, you're focused on March Madness, and of course, you're focused on your college team, but also you don't know if there's going to be a season, when the season's going to start, how much money you're going to make. There's so much up in the air, Ice. I can't imagine how relieved these college players must feel in addition to players in the W.
100%. I mean, I was relieved. I just think there are so many people who have so much at stake with whether this season was going to happen. And it being like the 30th anniversary of the league, which is a big deal. You know how when we get to the 10s and the 30th of things, we celebrate, right? And they're monumental things. And we talk about those that have come before us and what they've done to get us to this point. But I now think about somebody like a Kiki Rice who's looking and saying, okay. Well, this is X how much I could make this year compared to those who were on rookie contracts last year and the motivation that it's going to bring. Because if it was me, I would just be more motivated to go out there and do my thing, make sure I make the team, kill it. And then I know that I'm making substantial amount of money where I can just focus on playing basketball. I can just focus on doing my job. I think sometimes we look at the endorsements of players and these deals and we say, oh my gosh, they're everywhere and they're doing a great job and blah, blah, blah. They're not just doing it to be cool. They're not just doing it to be cool and to be the face of another brand here or there. They're also doing it because they needed to bring in revenue in different ways. And so I'm just excited to see how this grows the sport from a totality standpoint. And again, I really keep saying this, but especially internationally, I believe that the W still has a ways to go in terms of growing our game internationally and bringing in other countries and other players and other brands and sponsors that really want to support it. And so I think with the Toronto Tempo coming, we're going to see a little bit of that to start, but I think it will continue to expand. So it's great. It's up. It's CBA day. We're so thankful.
It's CBA
Praise
day.
The Lord. CBA Hook 'em CBA.
Oh my gosh. I do want to touch on something before. Always a Vic Schaefer on the brain. I do want to touch on something before we, you know, move on and make sure I say it. Ice kind of touched on it that things like this touch a lot of different people. One thing I've been really thinking about, just knowing my kind of background, is these games that are held, there are arena employees who, if games were missed or there was no season, they miss out on that income. And these are people who, you know, we've talked about $1 million player and we're very excited about that. But these are hourly workers who depend on that. There's a lot of people who run on freelance contracts or things like that who didn't know if they were going to be making a living this summer. I do just want to acknowledge those people. Also, Ice had touched on it earlier, which I am so grateful for because these are people who I'm friends with. And I went in and checked in on them Monday to make sure they were doing well. ESPN's Alexa Philippou, the Associated Press's Doug Feinberg, the Nine's Jackie Powell, and Front Office Sports' Annie Costable have been out there working long hours. Everything that we saw from Kathy, every quote we saw from Terry Jackson, from the lawyers, it is because of them and their outlets that they were there making sure that they had that information. I said it Wednesday morning on the morning show, but this CBA negotiation and where the WNBA is now is so different from in the past. And so kudos to them for being there and pushing that and getting us the information direct from those people.
Warriors. Truly. Mm-hmm. I mean, sitting on the freezing cold New York City sidewalks, and they didn't even know when the end was going to be. And they did it for people like us. They did it for people like you that are listening to this podcast. They did it for women's basketball fans. So I'm glad that you shouted out all of those people that deserve it. Concession stand workers, security guards, parking agents, janitors, the people who make our experience what it is. It makes sporting events what we love. So I was so great for all of those reasons. Neka Egbumike, the president of the WNBPA, said, "We're proud of ourselves. We always told you all we were going to do was stand on business. And that's what this looks like." They did it for themselves. They did it for us. They did it for every single person that the WNBA has touched and will touch moving forward. I am proud of the players. I'm proud of the league. I am so proud of what this league can build into, because this is just the beginning. This is not capitalizing on what has been. This is the beginning of a brand new era of the WNBA. And we get to be here for it. And I'm just happy to be here and happy to be here with y'all. Any final thoughts on the CBA, about the WNBA, the future of the WNBA, before we transition into our friend Brianna Stewart?
If you've learned nothing else from these negotiations from being afar, in 2026, we stand on business. Truly. We stand on business.
Mm-hmm. As we do. There's no better person to talk to about these negotiations, the marathon that it was, what it means for somebody who's been in the league and has experienced the growth of the league. Brianna Stewart, WNBPA VP, and of course, a star for the New York Liberty. She will join us here on Hoops 360 coming up next.
We are here with Brianna Stewart today. We are absolutely going to talk Unrivaled, which feels like forever ago already, your championship there and a new partnership with Samsung. But first, it is a massive day in the WNBA, women's sports in general. I think it's been a little over 12 hours since you toasted a new collective bargaining agreement. You were there, from my understanding, for the entire marathon bargaining session. Just what are your thoughts right now and how you're feeling about the deal?
Yeah, my initial thoughts, I'm very happy that we came to an agreement. Terms are still being written, so it's definitely not finalized yet. So don't want to get too specific into details, but knowing that this new CBA is going to be historic. It's going to create generational success between players of all levels, and really excited for everyone to kind of reap those benefits. It's something that we worked really hard to do, and being able to be there since the start of the negotiations on Tuesday and see it through with NECA, Breezy, AC, and Fee were also in and out, just showed the strength and the importance of having players there in the room. So really proud and really excited, and I honestly can't wait for all the other players to kind of see what we've done.
Understanding that you can't share details and you don't want to give away too much of what happened in the room, can you take us behind the scenes a little bit? Because I think the big difference between this CBA negotiation and past ones is, A, how much attention was on it, not just from the reporters who were there and outside, but just fandom. And then also these marathon negotiations and what it took from all of you as players to get this through, including being in the room working on this.
Yeah, I mean, definitely shout out to all the fans, really everybody supporting. You know, we had reporters that were also in the kind of marathon of a week with us. But like you said, other people were tuned in and paying attention. And just knowing that, you know, we had other people with fight and with support behind us. Obviously, it's not easy to go into a 17, 18 month long period of negotiations and still stand strong and hold your ground. But we continued to stay united in what we felt was most important for our league and our players, and just really excited for the collaboration going forward of both sides. Obviously, the big thing, you know, is there is rev share. You know, we are a part of the business now, and really embracing that role and taking that forward. And then the second question, can you repeat it?
Oh man.
What was the second?
I don't even remember, but just go.
I mean,
I did it to myself, Stewie.
I was like, I don't remember.
Just going behind the scenes and understanding, you know, just what it means to players. But I think probably part of the question also was communication wise, how this maybe looked different than previous ones. It certainly took longer than your previous one. I know you were in the league in 2020. In terms of union communication and in terms of negotiations, how do you feel like it was different?
Yeah, so I mean, I can only speak on to what I know. And in the last CBA, I was a player rep. Right. So I was not on the EC. So I wasn't really kind of in all of the negotiations. But from what I've heard, it's different when, you know, you're negotiating the same system like they did for the 2019 CBA with more money versus changing the system entirely. And I think that goes to the importance of having players in the room, you know, showing how much it means to us, showing, you know, while we have differences on certain topics, why we have differences, and just coming to a common understanding and common ground when both sides don't agree, and finding a creative solution for those type of matters.
Hopefully you've gotten a lot of sleep this morning. We're talking to you this afternoon, but knowing that the players were pushing for revenue sharing, and you've already confirmed that that is included, what have you heard from players in the 14 hours since this deal was made?
Honestly, the biggest thing that we've heard from players is they're excited, but more importantly, they continue to say, like, thank you guys. Thank you to us for being in the room. Thank you, you know, for kind of sacrificing our week or having multiple late nights to kind of, you know, stand on business and fight for what the players want in this league. And that's our job. So I think that's what I'm most proud of, is really having that kind of appreciation be echoed in such a short stint when, you know, not all players know the specifics yet. Of all the details, because we're waiting, like I said, for the term sheet to be finalized. And even still, they know that, you know, everybody makes sacrifices to get this thing done. And, you know, that's no surprise to who we are as a league and how we stay strong. And it was our 144 and now it's our 156. And soon it'll be our, like, I don't even know, 180, 180 players in this league. That's wild.
Something like that, yeah. You mentioned sacrifice, and I just wanted to mention to you that your wife, Marta, putting up those Instagram stories pretty early on that, like, she had barely seen you. And then the one of you walking out the door, she had you on a t-shirt because you weren't home, speaks to the sacrifice of everyone involved. But certainly, I think a lot of us, just people in general, could feel that situation in our hearts.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the sacrifices for everyone involved, and that's on both sides, honestly, like knowing that, you know, we were really working in tandem to kind of get this thing done. But for those that have families, you have kids, you have loved ones that, you know, you're not seeing as often, and, you know, they all understand, but still it's hard. I for the past 7 nights, like, I haven't seen my kids at night. I've seen him in the morning when I bring him to school at 8 a.m., but then I don't see him again until the following morning. And, you know, sometimes those sacrifices need to be made for the greater good, but still tough when you don't get to see your people as often as you like.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's early, but is there anything else you want to add about the CBA, the negotiations coming out of it and moving forward into what's going to be a wild next 50 days?
Yeah. That I'm just really excited. And I think that, you know, I hope that as the players get informed that they are equally as excited, not only from the on the court benefits, but also the off the court. Like, there's a lot of hard work that went into the CBA, and just really appreciate every person that helped get the job done. And, you know, like you said, once we get this thing hopefully finalized and voted on, it's going to be a marathon till start of season. And I don't envy GMs at this moment.
Neither do I. As a player heading into this time period, knowing everyone's a free agent, how are you approaching that? Is it any different than previous years?
Honestly, right now I'm not thinking about it. I want to think about being home for a second and just like being normal, and maybe later in the week or next week I'll think about it.
Well, you know what's being normal for Stewie is winning championships, which you just did it on Rivals. You win MVP of the finals. It's the second year. It's the league you created. Does this one feel any different because it was the league you created and continue to help mold?
Yeah, I mean, I think to help bring the Misties or the Mist to the championship is something that is really special for me. Like you said, being a co-founder of Unrivaled and, you know, in year two, turning the team around completely from not making the playoffs to winning the whole thing is super special. And this one has its own little bragging rights because it's like you win in your own league. And I think that's how I remember it. But also just remembering the players that I played with and helping them feel that emotion and championship feeling and the goggles and the champagne and all of that. It was just a fun night.
You were injured, I believe, during the first season, or you played through a knee injury, and then the Liberty had a lot of injuries going on. Yeah. What was it like to stand on top in Unrivaled after, I don't want to say a tumultuous year, but a year where things maybe didn't line up the way you had hoped that they would?
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, anybody who has to play through injury, it's hard. Because it's like not only a physical toll of not being 100%, but more of a mental toll of like not always being able to do the things that you want to do. So to have my first Unrivaled season and last year with the Liberty be a little bit up and down was frustrating. But I think that the joy that I felt from season two and Unrivaled and being back to be myself and playing free and pain free at the same time. Was just like really, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, I'm going to just say special, but there's a better word than that right now. I just can't think of it. To just be back, you know, and be myself, because sometimes when you have these hard moments or these struggles between seasons, your confidence can start to slip a little bit. But I had a great group around me to really help me get back to where I know I'm supposed to be.
The big thing about Unrivaled to me this year was you took it on the road. I was in Philadelphia. That crowd was absolutely incredible. All the excitement around it. You went to Brooklyn for the playoffs, mm-hmm. home of the Liberty. That seemed like an incredible environment and everything there. I know you guys plan on doing this more. Why do you want to make this such a big part of the plan moving forward? And do you think traveling playoffs will be a part of that?
Yeah, I'm really happy with the turnout from the tour stops. Obviously, I wasn't in Philly, but I heard it was insane. And Marina going for 47 like was the perfect way to kind of cap that night. But going to Barclays for the semis, you know, when there's my team playing, Tasha's team playing, like having that little crossover between Unrivaled and Liberty fans was really special. And listen, I'll say this, like if we weren't playing at Barclays, I don't know if we were coming back from that semifinal game down 16. The fans really, really kind of got behind us. But we definitely want to have more tour stops in the future. And knowing that because we did it two different times for two different parts of the season, like that just goes to show that this can work basically in any way that we want.
Having those fans behind you to mount such a comeback, you know, how important is that to the future of Unrivaled? And I ask simply because the arena that you guys have outside of Miami only holds 1,000, which is 1/16th or 1/18th of what you can pack into Barclays.
Yeah. You know, that's something that we're really thinking about is the future of Unrivaled and that, and also where we will be. You know, are we going to be able to move to a bigger arena? Are we going to travel to more arenas that hold bigger space? But we haven't really finalized an answer now. And I'm not going to be the one that gets in another conference room for like a while. So we'll just figure that out later.
Fair. Samsung introduced the Samsung Rest Club, a best-in-class recovery facility in women's basketball. That's why we're talking to you today. What are some of the features in the Rest Club, and how do these features support you throughout the season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, shout out to Samsung for not only the Rest Club, but just the way they continue to support us as a whole at Unrivaled from the player standpoint. And just the on-the-court and off-the-court aspects. And the Rest Club is really cool because it's a place where you can go, where you can kind of relax, rest, and recharge. And, you know, whether it's taking a nap or doing yoga or getting a massage or going in the hyperbaric chamber, like, these are all things that are fundamental for you to be your best. And Samsung is making sure that we have that.
These things that you have helped set up for Unrivaled, I know they've played a big part in CBA negotiations, not to go all the way back, but just how big of a part did it become in your resolve being in the bargaining room to have player benefits and support to the point that you have them in Unrivaled?
I mean, I think that from player perspective, like, we just want to have the best and the best resources at all times. So having that at Unrivaled, making sure that it's a one-stop shop where people can, you know, do their work, they can get their recovery, they can, you know, work on their brand, isn't always the case, but it will be soon. And, you know, I think that the standards that we set are the standards we're going to continue to hold and uphold in all the places that we go.
You have had a long 8 days, Stewie. Congrats on the CBA. We hope to see you on a basketball court soon and nowhere near a conference room.
Yes, exactly. Thank you.
Appreciate Brianna Stewart for stopping by the podcast. We know that she has had very little sleep over the last week or so. So I really appreciate her finding some time in her very busy schedule to sit down and reflect on what this means for the WNBA. But we got guests on guests on guests today, because not only is it CBA day, but we are also leading into the NCAA tournament. So UCLA guard Kiki Rice, the number 2 overall seed in the NCAA tournament, UCLA Bruins, she will join us coming up next. Joining us now on Hoops 360, we are so pumped to welcome in UCLA guard Kiki Rice into the show. Kiki, thank you so much for your time, especially in what I know is a very busy time for you and your teammates. You're joining us on behalf of AT&T. I do want to get to that in just a moment, but we're joining you, you know, just a couple of days before the tournament starts, just a couple of days after Selection Sunday. UCLA was the number 2 overall seed behind UConn. There was a lot of discussion, a lot of talk, and after beating Iowa the way that you all did in the Big Ten Championship, that was enough for UCLA to be catapulted to the number 1 overall seed. What was your reaction and your team's reaction to see where you netted out in the rankings?
Yeah, honestly, I think the biggest thing was we were just excited to see the bracket and see who we would play. We really try not to focus too much on seeds and all that outside talk, because we just know, you know, we can't control that. So I think we did a great job of narrowing our circle and just being excited about figuring out, you know, our bracket, what's our path, and what's it going to take to get to where we want to get to.
How did you feel about seeing that bracket and that path? I know a lot of people are talking about it being just a bracket of heavyweights with you guys, with LSU, with Duke. What were your kind of initial thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a ton of great teams in that bracket. But honestly, at this point of the year, like we talked about this as a team, it's like in order to go deep in the tournament, you're going to have to beat good teams. So I think it's, you know, every single game is going to be great preparation for the next game. And we're going to play really good teams early on. And that's something that we haven't shied away from all this season. So just kind of excited about some really big matchups that will definitely happen in that bracket.
Yeah, it's a stacked bracket. And I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves here. I know that there's plenty of basketball left to be played in games that you both need to win in order to potentially get to this point. But there could be a potential meeting between your team and LSU, a team that you've seen in each of the last 2 tournaments. LSU won that game 2 years ago. You got the best of them last year in the Elite Eight. What was your reaction when you saw a potential rematch for the 3rd year in a row against LSU?
Yeah, it is pretty crazy that we could potentially play the same team 3 years in a row in the tournament. But just exciting. I mean, look, both the last two games have been really good games. They've been good competition, good basketball. So I think that's what, as players, that's what we want. That's what's great for fans. That's what's, you know, people like to see. So I'm just excited about that game, that opportunity to potentially play them. But I think again, you don't know if that matchup is going to happen. So I think a big thing about this time of the year is just, you know, not looking too far ahead because you just never know, and you don't want to have your heart set on playing someone specific, and that might not end up happening.
When we spoke with head coach Corey Close a couple of weeks ago, we asked her what she had learned from last Final Four, and she spoke about herself as a coach, you know, experience it and being able to put that into you guys. In terms of your circle, in terms of players, what have you taken from that Final Four experience, knowing what's coming up should you reach another Final Four again this year?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is just how much that goes on at the Final Four that weekend. There's just a ton of media, a ton of distractions, a lot of events. And I think having had, you know, been there last year, we'll be much better prepared going into it this year, just because you'll know what to expect. We'll know how to prepare as a team to really just, you know, keep our focus on what it needs to be on. And then again, I think just having that experience of playing, you know, a Final Four court, playing at that stage, is going to prepare you better for the next time that it comes around. So just that comfort and knowing that we've been here before, we know what it takes to win at a high level. We'll just be confident, really confident going into those games.
You're a senior. Your teammates, Gabriela Jaquez and Lauren Betts, are also seniors. Does this tournament feel a little bit different knowing that it's your last opportunity?
Yeah, we have been reminiscing a little bit these last few days on just what an incredible 4 years it's been, and you know, everything that it has really taken to get to this point. But I do think we try not to focus too much on like, okay, this is going to be our last, you know, our last time as a team playing together. But we always remind ourselves to just like, enjoy the moment, enjoy each practice we have together, enjoy each road trip, each team dinner, just because there's not going to be too many more of these. So it is definitely a little sad, but we've all been so fortunate to have such a great group, such a great team, and just, you know, make the most of these last few weeks together.
I'm always curious about that compartmentalization of a senior, because in women's college basketball, the turnaround is so quick for players who are entering the draft, who then go to the WNBA, and you have a lot of potential there. How are you all balancing, we have a job to do, versus what you talked about in terms of enjoying the moment and reminiscing and just making sure you're not getting caught up in the reminiscing, I guess, versus focused on business?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult balance to strike. I mean, I think one thing we've definitely talked about a lot as a team is like, we just got to focus on where we're at right now. So we know obviously there's, you know, WNBA season, draft, a ton of stuff coming up, but like focusing on that, it's not going to help us win games right now in March, and it's not going to help us be the best we can for this team. So just like to try to limit, you know, all talk about that as we can, just because it's not going to help us. And then I think really just like playing each game, like it could be your last game, that mentality of we want to have more opportunity to play with each other, more opportunity to compete with each other, to win games. And that mentality will take us really far, just because you can't take anything for granted at this stage. Like we have six max games left we want to just be able to play all six of them.
Can't hold back now.
I know.
Yeah, it's for all the marbles. You've spent all four of your years at UCLA. That is something that is few and far between these days when it's so easy to jump for maybe a more attractive NIL package, or it's so easy to transfer through the transfer portal. Why was UCLA the right place for you for all four of your collegiate years?
Yeah, I do think the landscape of college basketball has changed so much. It's you know, pretty crazy to think that there's not many players who have been at the same school all 4 years of their college career. But I just felt like I came to UCLA for a reason. I came to help build a program. I came to help, you know, develop this program into a Final Four, national championship caliber program. And that takes time. It's not always going to happen over 1 year or 2 years. So just being prepared and like physically and mentally strong enough to like withstand that, like work with people, work you know, with teammates and get the right people in the places where we need them in order to build us into that program. And I'm just excited about like everything that we've been able to build here at UCLA. And I feel like you have to have the mindset of of, you know, this is a long-term thing in order to be really successful. And I think at UCLA, like we have a group of, you know, players and staff and everyone honestly involved in the program that's like, we're not just looking at a one-year basis. Like, this is a long-term thing and we've worked to build this. And that's why it means so much to us.
You have a matchup with Cal Baptist in the first round of the tournament coming up on Saturday. I'm curious what your approach is. You know, you're prepping for that game, of course, but then you have games every, you know, couple of days. You don't learn your opponent until the 11th hour. How are you preparing going into the tournament, knowing that there's, you know, more to be achieved ideally after that matchup with Cal Baptist?
Yeah, I think there's two things. You make sure you take it one game at a time, but at the same time, you're building habits each game that's going to allow you to be successful for the next game. So we know, don't overlook Cal Baptist. They're in this tournament for a reason. So we have to really focus and prepare for that team, you know, figure out whatever the scat is, what we need to do to win that game. And in the process of that, you have to, you know, build really high level habits that are going to allow us to be successful in the next game.
I know your group wants to be where you are, but it's a big day in the WNBA. They come to terms on a collective bargaining agreement. For you, knowing this is a potential next step in your life, in your career, I'm curious how you've been paying attention to it and what you think of it and just your thoughts seeing the news when you woke up this morning.
Yeah, I woke up. I was excited. I was really happy, really excited. I saw it immediately on my phone. And I think I was just really excited just because I know like all the women in the WNBA and the WNBAPA have worked really hard over these last few months to get to an agreement and, you know, for players in the W to finally, you know, be starting to get what they work so hard for and what they deserve. It's really exciting to see just for women's basketball, but for women's sports in general. And again, like throughout the season, I feel like we haven't been paying too much attention to it because it's like, as a college player, there's literally like nothing you can really do. You know what I mean? You kind of just sit and watch.
Yeah.
But I was really excited just because I know like I can imagine how much work and how many hours have gone into this. So it was really cool to see that news this morning.
They always talk about, just quickly, they always talk about doing it for the next generation. You are literally the first of that next generation to potentially benefit from it. What does that mean to you to know that's part of their bargaining?
Yeah, it's really cool because I feel like every few years there's, you know, a generation or a class that really gets to reap the benefits of what the people before them have worked so hard for. So I feel like I've been really fortunate for that with obviously going to the W, but then also like coming to college, NIL. So there's really like my class was one of the first few classes to experience NIL. And I think those two different, you know, landmark changes at these different stages have been really cool for me to experience. And I feel like it means a lot because it obviously speaks volumes about the players in the W right now, but it's like, it's motivating to us. It's like, we have to do the same thing for the next generation.
Man, you are fortunate. Yeah. That is good timing coming into NIL and going into
thank
this
your parents.
CBA. Yes, exactly. Great timing from your parents for sure. As you look ahead to this next step, I know that you have a very big undertaking ahead of you in these next couple of weeks. But what would be the ideal landing spot for you? It doesn't necessarily have to be an exact team, but when you look at a culture, when you look at a coaching style, when you look at a style of play, what is an ideal landing spot for you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing would just be going to somewhere that is, you know, the organization has high quality people and high quality culture. And I think that's something that I've been fortunate to have at UCLA and being able to experience that. That's something I really want at the next level. So just going to a place that values character, that values a group of people that work hard and me being able to contribute to help develop that as well.
Kiki, you are joining us on behalf of AT&T. So tell us a little bit about your partnership with them and the March Madness activation.
Yeah. Look, growing up, I feel like for a lot of us, March Madness was always one of the most exciting times of the year. Just the energy around the games, the excitement that fans feel from watching all the games. And, you know, AT&T does a fantastic job of providing March Madness fans with that seamless connection to games. And then in addition to that, I'm really excited because at Final Four in Phoenix, AT&T is going to have a virtual interactive basketball experience for fans to kind of get one step closer to what it's like to play in those big moments, to make a decision, to knock down a clutch shot. And for me personally, I know if I was a fan, that's something I would have loved to to do, to be coached by players that you look up to be able to kind of experience what it's like to play on the big stage. So I think that will be something really cool that I'm really excited to show that partnership with AT&T.
Kiki Rice, you are a rock star. Thank you so much for your time today, and good luck to you and your teammates as you go throughout the tournament.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Kiki.
Appreciate Kiki for stopping by. She also is a very busy woman this time of year. Aren't we all very busy women this time of year? So appreciate her for spending some time with us. You know, we know legends are made in March. We know that players, coaches, programs have the opportunity to put themselves on the map and immortalize themselves at their individual schools with what they can achieve in the NCAA tournament. You know, IceCast, we hung out this past week. We did the NCAA tournament show, and the term that we used a lot with UCLA was, if not now, then when? Kiki Rice, Gabriella Jaquez, Lauren Betts, these superstars on UCLA's team, they're seniors. They'll be gone next year. Corey Close will be starting anew. Is it fair to say that nobody's legacy has more on the line this March than Corey Close and UCLA's, Ice?
I actually do believe that is fair to say. In covering this team up close recently, they are aware that they've got six seniors or grad students that are very mature. They are aware that they have been to a Final Four, have come up short, and feel like they know what needs to be the difference maker this time around to get to a national championship. I think one interesting thing about this team, though, is they're not feeding into the pressure that exists with this legacy. And that's really essentially the conversation we're having right now, is there's a pressure on UCLA because of the legacy that has existed there and because of the players and coach that are there for them to win. And can they relieve this pressure? And that's kind of been their focus all season. Corey Close told me is, you know, last year we felt like we had a ton of pressure with our roster and what people were saying and kind of the outside noise, so to speak. This year, it was all about them. This year, they're not thinking about what we're ranked, what we're doing. We're undefeated in the Big Ten. No, they want to take it game by game and just make sure that they are playing their best basketball. It seems like a very tight-knit group. Seems like a group that is also expecting to win. I can't tell you how important it is this time of year that you expect to win versus hope you win. There's a change in the mindset in which you expect to win and you understand how you need to start games, how you need to perform from the beginning, but also in being UCLA, that every time someone sees you on their bracket, you are circled and circled and circled. I mean, teams are dialed in trying to knock you off. So I think that there's a ton of legacy that Corey Close has built at UCLA. We know that she is a very good coach. She's a very good recruiter, and she can win. The question now is, can you win in this day and age against other teams that also have similar characteristics? Can you win against UConn that also has some maturity and some experience and who's obviously won all of their games this season? Can you win against Texas that has maturity and experience and was also at a Final Four last year with you? So I love the storylines. The team that beat you earlier this season. So there are a ton of storylines around the Bruins, but you're 100% correct. If not now, when? They would need to win with this roster. This is the roster in which they need to get it done in. Otherwise, she will be rebuilding for the next few years, I believe.
I think the rebuilding part is so interesting in this day and age. You know, when we talked to Corey earlier in the season, she was very open in saying and kind of talking about the transfer portal and NIL and stuff and saying, like, she's not going to backfill with freshmen. Like, we're no longer in the era of you rebuild for 4 or 5 years. And I don't disagree with you that you lose six seniors, you're probably in a little bit of some sort of rebuild. You know, this hasn't been a legacy program in terms of you've had top tier success for many years. Like, I think there is a rebuild. How quickly that happens, though, when you backfill with all of these transfers and international talent, I think is interesting. In terms of the most on the line with a legacy, Vic Schaefer. I know we just chatted about him kind of briefly off air. You know, this is someone who went to back-to-back Final Fours, didn't win. I don't know that he has more because his success in terms of the NCAA is, I would argue, longer and deeper than Corey Close's. He brings another program and another team to the Final Four last year. He's potentially, you know, if he gets to the Final Four, gone back to back with these different teams. But I think he has a lot on the line as well in terms of, will this cement him as one of the best Hall of Famers?
1,000%. And winning a national championship changes everything. Going to a Final Four, going to back-to-back Final Fours, all of those are fine and good and wonderful, and you are reaching the pinnacle of the sport. Winning a national championship, though, changes everything. And I also think in a revenue share NIL world, winning a national championship also sets you up for success. Because when you are a women's basketball coach, when you're a women's basketball program, you're competing with other non-revenue sports. You're competing with the baseballs, the softballs, basketballs in some schools. And if men's basketball doesn't always generate revenue in every single school. So you're competing with other sports for revenue share. You have to campaign for your team to get a certain slice of the pie. Winning a national championship makes that much, much, much easier for your athletic department to invest in you to capitalize on your success. Going to a Final Four does that as well. Going to an Elite Eight does that as well. I don't want to get that twisted, but winning a national championship puts your program on the map, especially for UCLA, a team that's never done it, unlike anything else, unlike going to a Final Four, unlike having the number one overall pick. Winning a national championship, I mean, that is the pinnacle.
Yeah. I would like to say on the flip side of this, you know, we talked a lot about Corey Close's legacy and not necessarily player legacies. I'm going into this tournament thinking there are two player legacies that I'm wondering if they can also solidify themselves in our history books. The first is a Flaje Johnson for LSU. Yeah, mm-hmm. I really believe that Flaje obviously won a national championship her freshman year. Angel Reese was the big name and the engine on that team when she won. So I'm interested to see if Flaje Johnson, with a coach in Kim Mulkey who has won national championships, can get as close to a Final Four and really cement herself as one of the stars of our game in the collegiate level. I'm not sure she's quite there. We've seen superstardom from her off the court, obviously, in her music career. We've seen it on the court in terms of big games and her personality. But now is the year and the time and the season in which her as a senior needs to lead this team to a Final Four. That to me would be a legacy that I would look at and say, if they don't get to the Elite Eight, it's a bust, you know? And I'm not looking at Flaje's career the same as I would an AZ Fudd or the same as I would a Paige Beckers, etc. The other player is a young player in which we get more basketball from her, but I think she could cement her legacy right now is Sarah Strong. I think if UConn wins and Sarah Strong continues to be Sarah Strong, we are going to look at her and say, you are one of the best college basketball players we have seen in our game. And she's going to have two more years to double down, triple down, and make sure that we know that she is. So I also think from a young sophomore standpoint, Sarah Strong has everything going for her. But those are the two players that I'm really paying attention to in this tournament to see, what's your legacy going to be? And how early or how late could you cement that?
Sarah Strong could tie Breanna Stewart with four titles in 4 years.
Crazy.
She could do it. I want to jump on Flaje, though. I love that call out because I think her legacy in terms of what she's meant to LSU, and I wrote about this as a lead into the tournament, so much of it has been off the court. Her charity contributions, her rap career, just the fact Kim Mulkey said, you know, she committed to LSU when what did we have to sell? She was the first All-American or McDonald's All-American to sign with them. All of this is important. When you walk onto the LSU campus, that type of thing means something to LSU. But in terms of, and I'm assuming, Ice, you're talking national legacy, what we speak about in the basketball echelon,
yep.
Not quite there yet. She's a name. She's not a powerhouse, maybe is the way to put it.
Yeah. I think that's totally fair to say. 1,000%.
Totally.
And I'll speak from the LSU perspective. When LSU won the national championship Flaje's freshman year, it was like, oh, Flaje is coming back. She can't be stopped. Like, what more can she achieve? It was like, now this team's unstoppable. It was like, now this team has so many carryovers. Like, how – it wasn't like Kim Mulkey won one. Yay. It was how many will Kim Mulkey win? How many national championships will Flaje Johnson win? And they both, Kim Mulkey and Flaje, have kind of set this standard where losing in the Elite Eight isn't good enough. And that's awfully impressive considering that that's a program that, when I was in school there, not that long – I'm not that old – it, like, nobody talked about the women's basketball team. Like, they weren't selling out. Like, it was like you could get free tickets. Nobody talked about the women's basketball team. The standard has escalated to a sky-high level, and they just need the postseason outcomes to match that expectation. But I say, feel yes. like your – you players you called out, it's like – winning national championships that are yours. It's like having ownership over those championships. It felt like that first one that Kim Mulkey won, the only one that Kim Mulkey's won at LSU, it was like that was Angel Reese's in a way. Mm. Felt like last year, it was like that was Paige Becker's in a way. Even though Sarah Strong absolutely went off in the entirety of the tournament, we almost view that as the more senior players, Paige getting hers, Paige's, you know, success story at UConn, you know, Angel Reese and what she meant to that LSU team. Now it's Sarah Strong and Flage's opportunity to get theirs. We'll acknowledge AZ, of course. It would be AZ's 100%. As well, but it would feel 100%. Like that's theirs.
Yes. Look, pressure is a privilege this time of year, you know? So by no means am I saying Flage has just done an okay job in her college career and she doesn't win a championship where she's the main focal point. It's a bust. No, absolutely not. We are still going to remember her. But like Cass said, a lot of what we're going to remember are her off-court accolades. And maybe that's a credit to the beautiful person that Flage is, in that she was far from just being a basketball player. She's done so many other things. But when we start having conversations in 5-10 years and we're talking about college athletes and the runs that they've made and the winning that's been behind their name, I just would love to talk about Flage and say that she got or made a Final Four run where she was the engine. She was the focal point. She was the superstar that was able to get her team there. And I believe that she has it. I just would love to see it. This is why we love March. We want the brightest stars under the brightest lights to shine. And so those are two that I think will shine. And I'm looking forward to seeing how bright they can shine.
It's March. It's March! So we will have tournament reactions and tournament breakdowns coming to you as soon as these games end. So check out sports.yahoo.com for some instant reactions to tournament action. We will also have full pods coming at you as soon as the games end on Monday night. So stay tuned. You can find that on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page and on your preferred podcast platform. Some games to keep an eye on, though, over the next couple of days. We have the first four that tips off tonight on Wednesday. Richmond in Nebraska, followed by Stephen F. Austin in Missouri State. Thursday, the first four continues. We have Samford against Southern at 7 o'clock Eastern time. And then Arizona State in Virginia rounds out first four action at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And then it's tourney time. We get to the round of 64. This is a Maggie Dugan podcast here.
It's the Maggie Dugan girls. I like how you leaned in, but you still talked very loudly.
Yeah. I want to make sure that you can hear my whisper. So make sure to keep it right here on Hoops 360 with all of your tournament breakdowns. And also, we're going to get more CBA news that comes down the pipe over the next couple of days. So we will, of course, keep you updated with all things WNBA CBA as well, because we have one. Woo! Breathe a sigh of relief, wait, everybody.
Cheers. This is water for any boss watching this.
Cheers.
This has a logo on it, and there's no free publicity here on this podcast.
This is not water for anybody asking. It's tea. It's tea. It's tea. It's tea. There's a tea bag.
It's like, you know what? If you want to say, if you want to get crazy and celebrate how you want to celebrate.
That's on you.
Yeah, that is on you. You let that freak flag fly, sister. All right. Appreciate everybody for stopping by. Keep it right here with Yahoo Sports. For Cassandra Negley, that's Ice Young. I'm Caroline Fenton. Appreciate y'all for being here.